Well, we're going to continue our discussion of some biblical information about the resurrection. I think this is critically important to us because it's the resurrection that provides us with the hope that keeps us going. It's this resurrection that gives us the invitation for everything that we do. So tonight, what we're going to talk about is Paul's view of the reality of resurrection. We're going to talk about his conversion experience and the three times that that's related to us, or the three times that we read about that. And then we're going to look at his early writings, and we're going to look at his early preaching. The purpose for doing this is to understand that this is something that came from God. It was from God by way of revelation. It was not something that Paul developed over time as he dealt with the issues of his day. There are a lot of people that suggest that Christianity in general and the resurrection in specific is a fluid concept, that it's constantly in a state of flux. And we have to understand that what we can read about in the first century is not the way that Christianity ought to be pursued in the 21st century. I'm going to take issue with that. And we're going to talk about Paul. Admittedly, even if we talk about a man who lived to an old age, a man of 90 is not going to demonstrate the kind of change that people talk about. But it's been suggested that Paul's theology was an evolving theology, that what he thought about the resurrection at the beginning was not what he thought about the resurrection at the end of his life, because he had to change because of changing conditions. So, let's talk about Paul's conversion experience. First, we're going to look at it in Acts 9. Beginning at verse 4, and everybody that's here knows what the situation is. Paul is on the road to Damascus. He's going there to find Christians, to take them captive, bring them back down to Jerusalem where they can be tried before Jewish courts. In Acts 9, this happened. This is Luke giving us the record of what happened. He fell upon the earth. This is Saul. And he heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me?" He said, "Who art thou, Lord?" He said, "I'm Jesus, whom thou persecutest. But rise, enter into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou must do." So at this point, in terms of those themes that we talked about at the beginning, remember the five themes of New Testament information about the resurrection? What do you see here? Anybody? Yeah, Kim.
Well, I was just going to say that Jesus appeared to Saul. He had appeared to the other apostles, but Saul wasn't an apostle yet. Saul wasn't chosen yet. And this appears to me is like the beginning of that choosing process. And so Jesus actually appeared to him. I don't know in what form, if it was just him hearing him, or he actually saw him before he was struck blind. I don't know. But I do know that Jesus appeared to him. And we do know that that is a qualification of an apostle.
Okay. Yeah, you may be picking up some language that comes later.
True.
At this point, all we can say for sure is that Paul heard Jesus.
Or Saul. Saul heard Jesus.
Right. Yeah, Carol, you have your hand up.
Well, it's one of those things. It's not just that he can testify that he saw, but Jesus is resurrected. I mean, Saul has just received this big bucket of cold water over his head, and he says, I'm alive, and you're persecuting me because you're persecuting these other people. So, I mean, he has seen his guilt full tilt.
Okay. As far as the resurrection goes, the only information that we have at this point from what Luke said is that Saul heard Jesus. Okay? So I want to be real specific about the development of information. When Luke tells the story, he says, this is what happened. Now, Luke can't tell it from Paul's perspective, right? Luke is writing as a historian. We don't know what Paul saw. Paul has not told us yet. Yeah, that doesn't mean that there's a developmental aspect to his theology or to his view of the resurrection. Just means he hasn't given his version of it yet. Yeah, Ted.
I had to look back to see you those 5 points because I didn't memorize them. But looking at those 5 points, I would say that looking at the first point, resurrection is a bodily reality, I don't think Paul can dispute that here.
Okay.
And seeing that Jesus was resurrected first, he's the first fruit. Again, he can't dispute that. He's never seen a resurrection like Jesus's. And now it's right in front of him. He cannot dispute that Jesus was resurrected because Jesus is talking to him right now. And then the fifth point, resurrection, or the fourth point, Jesus' resurrection establishes his lordship and hence divinity, talking to Jesus from heaven. That pretty much establishes Jesus' divinity right there.
Right. What I see as important here is the connection between Jesus and his people. You pick on Jesus' people, you're picking on Jesus. Okay? So, let's go to the next instance where we read something about this conversion experience. Now, understand, this time, Paul is telling us. So it takes on a slightly different feel because it's not Luke telling us what happened to Saul. It's Saul, well, at this point, his name has been changed. Paul is going to tell us this is what happened back there on the road to Damascus. Okay? It says, this is Acts 22, at verse 6. It came to pass that as I made my journey and drew nigh to Damascus about noon, suddenly there shone from heaven a great light round about me. I fell to the ground. I heard a voice saying, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And I answered, who art thou, Lord? He said unto me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom thou persecutest. What do you see here? What's been added to this? Yeah, Lee.
There is an identification as to who this voice is, who this belongs to this voice that wasn't in the previous verse.
Okay. So there's a recognition of deity.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. What else do you see? If Paul is telling it, how is it different from when Luke tells it?
I see Paul telling us specifically that point number four, this was Jesus in his heavenly kingdom talking directly to him. That this wasn't some ethereal voice. Paul recognizes who it was and recognizes divinity, right then and there.
Okay? And that's what Paul says, I did back then. Right? This is not Paul saying, this is what I've come to realize. Paul is saying, this is what I did back then. It's an unchanging theology. Yeah.
Paul is using...
Go ahead, Bill.
He's talking first person. Instead of a third person telling...
Okay.
Third person telling about what happened. This is Paul himself. This is first person stuff.
Okay.
And I look at this too, and it's conjecture. I understand that. But I have no doubt that Paul was right there in that crowd when Jesus was crucified. He was right there under the Sanhedrin, under the council. He was Pharisee of Pharisees. He was studying there. Jesus was brought before them. I personally don't think there's a doubt in my mind that Paul was right there mixed right up in it. He knew who Jesus was.
Jesus is tried before the council.
And he was right there shortly after. We now are talking in Acts that he was out there actively persecuting people.
Well, he was a member of the council.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. He was on the Sanhedrin. I mean, if you had a roll call list, Saul of Tarsus was on there. So, yeah, it's conjecture in a sense, but in a very real sense, it's not.
You know, I look at that, and then when all of a sudden he gets this light and this voice of Jesus comes out and said, "You're the one that's persecuting me." Boy, that had to be a real knockdown dragon.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Carol.
Well, in verse 6, it says, and suddenly there shone from heaven a great light around me. So it definitely points to the fact that Jesus is in heaven and that he's still alive.
Well, in a sense, yes, but I'm just saying this is the light that originated in heaven. That doesn't to say, therefore I know Jesus is in heaven, is kind of a leap that may not be justified. Yeah, Lenny?
In verse 6 of Acts 22, Paul adds that it was around noontime. And in verse 8, Jesus identifies himself as Jesus of Nazareth, whereas in chapter 9, he just says, "I'm Jesus."
Okay. Okay. So Jesus is more closely identified, more specifically identified. Good point. Okay, let's go on. Now he has to tell this event again. He's on trial one time, and then he goes and he's on trial again. So he has to give his testimony over again. And one of the ways that we know whether somebody is being truthful about their testimony is you ask them the question and you wait a little while and you ask them a question again. Do they tell you the same information? Okay. When we're lying, we tend to change the story. It's just inevitable that it changes. Now, I've never been in the position of being an investigator or a policeman who was trying to figure out what was going on. I know Kim has. And she would tell you that when you're trying to get to the truth of the matter, when you're trying to figure out what went on, you ask it, tell me what happened. Then you wait a little while and you say, tell me what happened again. I want to make sure that I get this correct. And when people are lying, the story changes. It changes because they're reading your body language. whether you believe them or not. So they'll change details. How do I know that? Because that's the way I did it. My dad would ask me where I went. And I'd tell him. Then a little bit later, he'd ask me where I went. Now, I was reading his body language. I was making sure that the car had gas in it. Okay? But this is an indication that Paul is telling the same story. Now, chapter 26, he tells the story again. Whereupon, as I journeyed to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priests, at midday, O king, I saw on the way a light from heaven above the brightness of the sun shining round about me and them that journeyed with me. When we were fallen to the earth, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew tongue, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And I said, Who art thou, Lord? The Lord said, I'm Jesus, whom thou persecutest. But arise, stand on thy feet. This is where we pick up that extra bit of language. For to this end have I appeared unto thee, to appoint thee a minister and a witness both of the things wherein thou hast seen me, and of the things wherein I will appear to thee. So what can we say about resurrection information?
In the first verse that you looked at, I think it was chapter 9 of Acts.
Okay.
It said, those who were with him heard the voice, or heard the words. In the 22nd chapter of Acts, where Paul is saying it, it says they didn't hear the words. This confuses me a little. And then this last accounting, it doesn't say anything about it.
Well, Kim?
I was just going to say, my version of verse 9 of 22, I think, kind of makes it clear. He says, my companions saw the light, but they did not understand the voice of him who was speaking to me.
Okay.
So I suspect they heard the voice, but they didn't recognize that it was Jesus. Even when Jesus told Saul that I am Jesus of Nazareth, the one that you're persecuting, the people who were with him, he didn't appear to them. He appeared to Saul.
And I think
they didn't understand it.
Yeah, I think your observation kind of clears something up. They heard a noise. But to say that they heard a noise, or even to say that they heard a voice, may not be the same. How is it that they might have heard the voice but not been able to understand? Who was with Saul? Soldiers, Roman soldiers, they're the ones that are taking him. What language did the voice speak?
Hebrew.
So it's not surprising at all that if you had Roman soldiers escorting Paul and they hear a voice, they wouldn't understand it because they don't speak Hebrew. Right? This makes perfect sense. But it's not a developmental idea. Yeah, Kim.
Well, it could also make sense in my mind that it's a miracle. I mean, this is quite miraculous. Because Jesus' purpose at this point was to appear to Saul. So it could be that he only intended for Saul to understand and not for the others. But, I mean, the language thing makes a lot of sense, too. But I wouldn't discount the miraculous part of it, because the purpose was, and it's really clear, I think, in chapter 26, that Jesus was seen by Paul.
Right.
And we have other instances of miraculous tongues where people understood what one person was saying in their own language. even though it's only one person speaking. That, of course, is a miracle because he's not speaking multiple languages coming out of one mouth. But people are hearing multiple languages coming out of one mouth. So if Jesus wanted only Paul to understand what he was saying, it is dialect, regardless of whether there were other Jews there or not. And Jesus didn't want them to understand what he was saying. There we go. That's what he did.
Okay. Now let me ask a question. Is this a vision that Paul has that's like the vision that Peter had when he was up on the housetop in Joppa?
No.
Remember, he's in a vision. He saw a sheet let down from heaven with all kinds of animals in it. Was there really a sheet?
No. His was a vision. This was the one that Paul's companions also witnessed.
Okay.
I was going to say, they all fell down together. Roman soldiers aren't going to fall down with Paul because Paul's seeing some ethereal thing.
Okay.
They all fell down. They all recognized this was something to fall down with.
Okay. It's interesting this word appear is a physical kind of appearance. Okay? It's not a vision like a sheet. Like what Peter saw in Acts 9. When he went to the household of Cornelius, this sheet that he saw, it was just a vision of a sheet. This is something different. Yeah,
well,
Carol.
If he's going to testify that he saw Christ resurrected, he has to, if not here, somewhere. And also the fact that when he got up, he did what the voice told him to do.
That's true.
He put credence, not just because of his blindness, he put credence in what Jesus said. And so he followed Jesus' instructions.
That's true. But so did Peter put credence in what he put credence in what was said because of the sheep that he saw. So, I see that as being important, but I don't think that helps me to know whether he really saw Jesus or he just saw a vision of Jesus. The language, I think, indicates that he saw Jesus. This is the bodily resurrection. Okay? That's why this Jesus that he saw said to him, okay, this is the language of a person speaking to you. Yeah, Bill.
Just a little farther down, the man that journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing the voice but beholding no man. So they knew this was something real. They had no idea what was going on.
That's true. But they did not see it. Okay?
It's curious. If these were soldiers that were taking Saul somewhere.
Well, I'm making that assumption. Paul is under arrest and he's being escorted. So
they took him where he needed to go to get his testimony instead of to a jail.
That's interesting.
It is.
I never thought about that. That's interesting.
Maybe because of this vision that had been so shocking to them.
That's interesting. I'll have to ponder that. So they took him to Damascus. He might have been going to Damascus. That might have been on his way anyway, but
yeah, that was where his mission was.
Yeah, but
he needed to go to Ananias.
Okay, interesting. To this end, I have appeared to thee. That's what the person that he saw said. Now, Bill and I were talking a little bit about, well, he recognized Jesus. And this idea of recognition, I think sometimes we take that a little bit too far. When I was teaching at Eastern, I taught the same students for 3 years. That's how long it took to go through the school site program. And I had those students in two classes each quarter. And by the end of the second quarter, I could read something that had been written, and I could tell you which one of my students wrote it. I didn't need to look for a name. Okay? The fact that I could identify them from communication doesn't demand that I hear them. You know, I used to talk about this. I could identify who you were without seeing you if I heard your voice on the telephone. And that's true. That's true. But then I began to think about this. I don't even need to hear your voice to know who you are. So let's not make too much out of the idea of recognition, because that may be maybe something where there isn't something. But the language that's used here, I think, is important. So here's Paul's conversion experience. Jesus spoke to Paul. We know that. And he identified himself. Jesus explained to Paul why he appeared to him. Wasn't Paul saying, oh, I know why Jesus appeared. Jesus said, this is why I appeared. Okay? This is not something that could have developed over time with Paul's understanding as he's trying to construct some kind of a way to understand the resurrection in light of everything that's going on around him. That's not what happened. And Paul talks about this even later. Look at 1 Corinthians 15. Can somebody read 1 Corinthians 15 at verse 8? And this, I think, is the point that Carol was making when she said this idea of knowing that someone is alive, that they have been raised from the dead, is something that only an eyewitness testifies to. Somebody read 1 Corinthians. Let me get somebody from home to read 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58. Carolyn, is Carolyn on tonight?
Yes.
Verse 8.
Then last of all, he was seen by me, also by one born out of due time.
Okay. So he appeared to Paul as one born out of due time. What do you think that means? What does it mean to be born out of due time? Yeah, Bill?
It may not be right, but the apostles that Paul knew of had all been with Jesus, and Paul was chosen after the fact.
Okay.
He never got to walk with them.
Okay, that's true. So how is that out of due time?
A strange expression.
Yeah, it's a weird expression. Out of due time. Yeah, Ted.
In Acts, when they were trying to replace Judas, the qualification for becoming an apostle was that you had to be with Jesus from the time that he started his ministry
yeah.
until the time he was crucified. And then
3 years.
That you had to have witnessed that happening. Paul, if he witnessed it, we aren't told that. So at the time that they chose somebody to replace Judas, Paul wouldn't have been somebody who was qualified to be an apostle. So Paul could say, you know, I understand what it takes to be an apostle, but I was chosen as somebody to be an apostle who was qualified because Jesus chose me himself.
Okay. Yeah, Carol.
Or if you just go to the word seasons, out of due season, when you have weather that's in the middle of winter where you're out in your shorts and your t-shirt, or you have a snowstorm in the middle of summer, it's out of the ordinary. It's not what one expects to have happen.
Right. It's just out of the ordinary. Okay.
I have another thought about that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The other apostles that walked with him, that were a part of his ministry for 3 years, they did have a sort of a developmental mindset. Jesus called them. I mean, I think of him going to the fishermen and calling them and saying, follow me. And they dropped their nets and they followed him. They left their livelihood. They left everything. But man, they struggled. All along, things were being unfolded to them constantly. They were constantly evolving in their faith, evolving in sort of this relationship with Jesus and their understanding. Paul was snatched immediately from his former way of life. And as soon as he was converted, I mean, he was out preaching right away. Obviously, the Holy Spirit had imparted knowledge to him that he didn't already have. So this is definitely a birth out of due season. The other guys really had set that maturation that they were able to go through as they were in that ministry with Jesus, kind of this ragtag band of guys and they're trying to figure it out and they keep messing it up. And Jesus said, how long are you going to be with me before you figure this out? And then Paul, He's kind of like born a mature Christian when he's born a Christian. He's born a mature Christian. That doesn't happen to the rest of us.
It's a good point. Good point. Yeah, Bill.
Along with that, it's interesting that as soon as Jesus identified himself, Paul referred to him as Lord.
Yeah.
What do I do, Lord? He didn't quibble. He didn't ask any questions, except, who are you?
Yeah, it's really fascinating to look at that, at Paul's use of the term Lord. That's an Old Testament term. And for Paul to use that carries some really important significance. I really didn't take the time to look at that for this discussion, but look at the term Lord and trace it through the Old Testament, and this is the first time that it's used in the New Testament. So it's really fascinating to look at that language and watch what's going on. Yeah.
He knew the scriptures.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
In and out, you know, but even I know when I was baptized, I had listened to sermons for 2 or 3 or 4 years and never been baptized. And I asked the preacher, can you show me 2 scriptures? And then I made my decision. Now is the time, I believe. But before that, I thought I was a believer. And it was kind of the same with Paul, but he was a little more immediate.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Let me get Ted. You have your hand up.
All I was going to say is Paul also adds to this story in Galatians as well.
And okay.
Gives us a little more information in verse 16 and following, where he says, to reveal this has come in me so that I might preach him among the Gentiles. I did not immediately consult with flesh and blood, nor did I go to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me, but I went away to Arabia and returned once more to Damascus. Then 3 years later, I went up to Jerusalem to become acquainted with Caesar Paul and saved him in 15 days. So he gives this little information. You know, there's time there that we're not aware of.
That's true.
Where he had to mature in his understanding of Jesus.
That's true. That's true. And to look at Paul's earliest writings, and Paul apparently had some visions that are distinguished from what happened on the Damascus Road. Okay? A vision doesn't prove the resurrection. Don't get me wrong. A vision gives us information, but a vision doesn't prove the resurrection like seeing the person. Okay? Paul saw it. And then there was this time when Paul learned, okay, and to say that Paul's understanding developed over time misses the point where Paul says, I didn't confer with men. It wasn't something that developed from my contact with men. It came full blown from God. Good point, Ted.
Dean, on that Lord in verse 9, because I know my first inclination years ago was that he recognized Jesus as Lord. But it is in the capital L and the smaller letters. It's not recognizing them as deity, but it is recognizing them as someone with higher authority.
And it was out of respect. That's a respectful term.
Yeah.
And we don't do that sort of difference thing just so it's not a normal thing for us. But without a word study, I can't give you any more than what
That's true. The King James translators did us a favor. When they translated the term Lord, Lord comes from two different words. One is all caps. The other is capital L and minuscule O-R-D. So those are two completely different words. They have completely different meanings. And we miss that in a lot of other translations. That's why you'll see that in the King James translation. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that a voice from heaven with a bright light would be understood by Saul as being from God. When he said, who are, you know, what do you want, Lord, or who are you, Lord? He was a very religious man and a godly man. He believed in God. He didn't recognize it was Jesus until Jesus told him it was Jesus.
Okay.
He recognized this as being Lord God. And then Jesus clears it up. Yeah, I'm one and the same. And you're persecuting me. So I think that when he said Lord, he recognized that it was God, but he did not recognize that it was Jesus until he
was okay.
Saved. Yeah.
Okay. Bill.
On that. When Paul said, what shall I do, Lord? Right after that, he said, and the Lord said to me. And that indicates he knew where it was.
That's true. That's speech. Okay. That's not, I heard this from the Lord. That could be something that arises within your brain. Okay. And if you wear hearing aids, sometimes you think that happens because the sound comes from inside. So it's just weird. This is not Paul saying, I heard this. It's saying the Lord spoke this. Those are two different things. Yeah, Ron.
Yeah.
Are you asking me a question?
I thought you had something to say.
Oh,
sorry. I can't always tell whether people are just bidding or they have something that they want to say. Tell you what, I'll post these last four slides. There's not a lot here that I specifically wanted to discuss. One is to look at Paul's earliest preaching, and some of the earliest preaching he did was in Athens. This is in Acts 17. In Acts 13, you see him affirming the Lord again. Earliest writings, the two earliest books that Paul is said to have written were Galatians and 1 Thessalonians. So it's important to look at Galatians and his understanding there, and to look at 1 Thessalonians, and you see it consistently throughout 1 Thessalonians. So I'll send these slides over to Jared. You can take some time and look at this even more closely. And then Paul talks to the Thessalonians at a later time, and he reminds them of some things that he had written. So you also see this in 2 Thessalonians, the first chapter. Any further comments? We just kind of run out of time. That's okay. That's okay. That's the way it should be. So here's his resurrection reality. He's talking about the resurrection. It's been consistent from the beginning of Paul's ministry. It was not a developed theology. This is Galatians 1, verse 12, beginning, and Paul makes this clear. I did not, neither did I receive it from man, nor was I taught it, but it came to me through revelation of Jesus Christ. You've heard of my manner of life in time past and the Jewish religion, how that beyond measure I persecuted the church of God, made havoc of it, and I advanced in Jewish religion beyond many of my own age among my countrymen, being more exceedingly zealous for the tradition of my fathers. But when it was the good pleasure of God, who separated me even from my mother's womb and called me through his grace to reveal his son in me, that I might preach him among the Gentiles, straightway I conferred not with flesh and blood. So this is something that came from God. Yeah, Bill, you got the last comment.
It's kind of alluded to here, but when Stephen was stoned, it was mentioned that Saul was a young man. So this was shortly after that. And whatever his, I don't know how many years evolution we have Paul teaching, but he always sounded the same to me, except once he was born again.
Okay. Good one. Now, remember, a young man then would have been 30 years old.
Yeah, he did mention he had advanced beyond many of his own age.
Yeah.
And I, when I see that, I think of, he was like Jesus, studying beyond others of his own age. He was like an advanced student.
Yeah.